Welcome back to another episode of Uncle Takes. We're your hosts, Monica and Tank. And today we're doing Burnt, which is a drama slash comedy that came out in 2015. It stars Bradley Cooper. He plays the main character, Adam. And Adam has his band of compadres. Sienna Miller plays Helene. I don't recognize any of the other names except for Matthew Rice, who plays a character named Reese. But the other characters are Tony, Max, Michelle, David. Emma Thompson. She's super famous. And Uma Thurman has a very small part. She's like a food critic at some point. And Lily James, which I think was the... I know her from a Yesterday movie about the Beatles.
I think she did that, yeah.
Yeah. So the main cast isn't super famous. The supporting characters are like cameos.
The main cast is also very famous.
I mean, Bradley Cooper's famous. Sienna Miller is. I don't know who Daniel Brühl is or Ricardo.
Daniel Brühl is pretty famous for being Baron Zemo.
Was that a movie?
He's the villain in Captain America. Civil
it all War. Comes back to Marvel. Like, I just need to up my fucking knowledge of the Marvel universe.
Yeah, no, but he's like in a lot of stuff, but he is very big for that. And I think he's relatively well known. But I can imagine. I think he's probably more well recognized than well known, I guess. He's in a lot of things, but
for a second there, I thought you were going to tell me he's Bucky the Winter Soldier.
I actually like confused these two guys, even though I don't think they're that similar. But yeah, he's a different guy who's also in that movie.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the summary of Burnt is that after a 3-year hiatus, shucking oysters, Adam, a maniacal 2-Michelin-star chef and recovering drug addict, is back in Europe seeking his third star. His last restaurant endeavor ended in ruin by his own hand, and he destroyed many people's lives in Paris in the process. After locating these former Parisian co-workers in London, he begins reassembling the team of maniacs to give it another shot. Yeah, so it just follows him throughout the movie. I wanted to do this movie because I feel like I've seen it over the years. It came out in 2015, and, you know, having come from a family that has a couple restaurants in there, I'm always loosely interested in these movies. Like, Chef came out, the Bear TV show, which we'll talk about. Like, I don't know, this was kind of on my list, so, yeah, finally watched it. And got into it. But yeah, maybe we start out with the shucking of the oysters. Like, he destroys the Paris restaurant and sabotages everything he knows, and then goes to Louisiana to shuck a million oysters and keeps track in his little journal. And apparently he was only in Louisiana for 3 years. And that's a pace of 900 oysters a day. I don't know what kind of establishment needs 900 oysters shucked a day. Did we ever get that?
Yeah. Well, in his logbook, too, it looked like he was doing several thousand a day, just like judging by the numbers. So, yeah, I don't know if they, like, timed it out super well. I feel like you could do 900 a day if you like an oyster place, right? If that was, like, a big part of your... Yeah, I guess I've never worked at, like, an oyster-heavy establishment.
But, so I think I've tried oysters twice in my life. Once was like 15 years ago, and I don't remember much of it. And then the other, we recently went on vacation to Colonial Williamsburg, and we went to a place that had dollar oysters, and I got one of all of them and tried them. And they're fucking gross. They just taste like cold boogers. Salty, seawatery, cold boogers. And I don't know why or who came up with the idea to eat oysters. This is a tangent. But, like, oysters are the fucking filtration system of the ocean. Who thought it's a good idea to eat them?
Yeah, because they have all the stuff they filtered out, right?
Yeah, they're fucking gross. They're bottom feeders. Anyway, yeah. So, oysters are gross, but somehow he shucked a million in 3 years, which is just impressive pace. Yeah, and that's his penance as he like tries to sober up and recover from having sabotaged the Parisian restaurant.
Yeah, so did he sabotage the restaurant?
Maybe he just... there's a lot of restaurant destruction in this movie.
Yeah.
So maybe he just pulled one of those. Because at some point we see... Because
they seem to still like him.
Yeah, his drugs and bad temperament. Just, I don't know, he ruined it. Maybe he destroyed right. things.
Because he did sabotage Michelle's restaurant.
Yes.
Okay.
So maybe he didn't sabotage, maybe he just destroyed everything and flipped the tables, like we see throughout the movie. That's common characteristics of chefs, I guess. So anyway, his motivation is to get this third Michelin star. And one thing that I thought was weird is he kept phrasing it. He wanted to get his third star. Oh yeah, I got to get my third star. And it's just like, I don't think you have to get one and then get two and then get three. Like, if you are amazing, I think you can just start out and get three. So it's a weird phrasing thing that just kept coming up. And I was like, why are you phrasing it like that? You just want to start a restaurant and make it be a three star restaurant. You know?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Huh. I thought that was like they had started three different restaurants. They were all Michelin star restaurants. But looking at the rating system, it is just a 1, 2, or 3 star.
Okay, so you were also confused. You thought it was a progression thing where like you first had to earn star one and then you could unlock the challenge for star two.
So I thought it was just like you're a Michelin star restaurant and he had already had two separate Michelin star restaurants. So he wants to like do it again and this would be his third star.
Yeah, okay. So it's, yeah, you were just as confused. But I don't think that's how it works.
Okay, like, yeah, no, that's not how it works, I guess.
Yeah, I think you can just be a 3 Michelin star restaurant and a 3 Michelin star chef, and you'd never had to have achieved 1 or 2. Like, as soon as you get to 3, you're just the best. I don't know who you learned from. Maybe you studied under one of these great Parisian chefs and then went out to do your own thing. But yeah, he made it seem like it was a progression. I don't think it's a progression. Actually, I've never been to a 1 Michelin star restaurant, so couldn't tell you what it's like to actually experience that. Are you aware of any 3 Michelin star restaurants in the States? Like, I feel like you have to be in...
I'm looking at a list of them.
Downtown San Francisco or New York City or something.
Yeah, so it looks like San Francisco, New York City, Chicago has 2. There's a couple in California. There's 1 in Virginia and 1 in San Diego. Those are sort of like the outliers. But there's not a lot. They're mostly in Europe, it looks like. Oh, and Japan. They seem to love Japan.
Yeah. Well, in the movie, we hear one of the characters, David, explain that apparently 1 star is like your Luke Skywalker, and 2 star, your Alec Guinness. I don't know who Alec Guinness is. And then 3 star is your Yoda.
He's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Alec Guinness is Obi-Wan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He actually says whoever Alec Guinness played in that movie.
Okay, so it's just a Star Wars-based rating system for him?
Yeah. Well, the third one was Yoda, so did you sort of put together that the one in the middle would also be a Star Wars thing?
No, I figured he went out of left field, you know?
Okay.
Why would it be a Star Wars reference?
And that was in one of Lily James's, I think, like 2 scenes?
Yes. Yeah. But I actually wrote down the description from, you know, the Michelin Wikipedia page. 1 star, a very good restaurant in its category. 2 star, excellent cooking worth a detour. 3 star, exceptional cuisine worth a special journey. As I understand it, even achieving 1 star is incredibly difficult. Like, the amount of waste and dedication it takes in order to get a 1 star rating is just impressive. Like, I don't know how many 1 star restaurants there are in other major cities, but it, you know, 3 stars, there's 10 in the States. So 2 stars, maybe there's 100, and 1 stars, maybe there's 1,000. I don't know.
Yeah, I did not realize it was a 1-3 rating system. I literally thought it was like star or no star.
Oh, gotcha.
Which is why I thought, again, he was trying to get his third star. It was, you know. Oh, actually, it does list how many 1-star restaurants there are. So there's 13 3-stars in the States and 177 1-star restaurants.
Okay, so a pretty elite club, which is good. Yeah, I guess these tire salesmen in Europe for the Michelin company just wanted to note which restaurants were the best. So they started doing food reviews, and now this is like the gold standard of rating systems. But yeah, like at one point in the movie, his main rival, played by Matthew, is Reese how you pronounce the
I think it's Matthew
actors?
Reese.
Matthew Reese plays Reese. Reese is like his longtime competitor, longtime rival, who just gets like, I don't know, they're upset at each other's success. Not an upset doesn't characterize it. They're furious and willing to throw away their entire lives if the other is successful. And they refer to themselves as Mozart and Salieri at some point, which I don't know much about classical music. The only other time I've heard the reference of Mozart Salieri is in the movie Yesterday. Whenever.
What a yesterday
A lot
stuff.
of Yesterday references so far, yeah. Yeah, like Ed Sheeran is a competition against the main Indian guy. And he's like, "Yeah, you're definitely Mozart, mate, and I'm Salieri." So, like, what was the relationship between those two? Are you aware of this?
I think Mozart was the more talented one, and Salieri was supposed to be the jealous sort of one. I think that's not actually true. Again, I think it's not necessarily like real to that extent.
Oh, you think the entire story's fabricated just for like hype, like Pat and Gino's rivalry?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I've heard conflicting things. I don't actually know, because I think that I've read that they like didn't know each other, but that they weren't like bitter rivals. They might have just been like competitors, but not necessarily, as they're portrayed in various media.
Yeah, but the reaction that Reese gives, like whenever he doesn't even get the Michelin stars. He just gets like a favorable review in the local paper. And maybe I missed that the local paper was actually like a well-revered food critic paper. But in response to Adam Jones getting a good review from this paper, Reese proceeds to destroy his fucking restaurant and destroy all the bone china. Flip all the tables. Like, it's as if the stars are limited and there can't be 2 3-star restaurants in the same city. That's the reaction he has. And it's just, I don't think that's how it works at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously there can be multiple, as we just looked at, and that is the movie shows, I guess. Yeah, they just seem like, yeah, weirdly competitive and also, I don't know, violent or destructive. But yeah, it's, I mean, they were rivals. They worked in the same kitchen. It's not really clear why they don't like each other. Because I think of how he acted in John Luke's kitchen. I don't know why he doesn't like Matthew Reese's character. I guess maybe he's jealous the guy got it together.
Yeah, I mean, I think it boils down to arrogance, right? Like the way chefs are depicted in this movie, I don't think is too far from the truth for this specific kind of chef. Like you have to be dedicated, and you know, like Gordon Ramsay, Marco Pierre White, they come to mind. They're just maniacs in the kitchen in order to achieve these stars, and it's not uncommon for chefs to be unhinged savages like this. So, yeah, maybe they just couldn't coexist with each other because they both had just intense arrogance to them, and they couldn't handle being around somebody who was arguably as good. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's just their rivalry, you know.
Right. I mean, so Matthew Rhys's guy seems to be more into like technology and new techniques, and Adam Jones seems to be more old school, kind of.
And when you say old school, like they literally in the movie say, "Oh, that was so 5 years ago," and because and Adam like looks down his nose at people who cook with a sous vide, which is the boil and bag technique of cooking, then they just finish searing on the outside. So yeah, Adam at the beginning of the movie resists using the sous vide and the new technology, but then ultimately comes to embrace it after recommendation from his team.
Yeah, and that's like kind of a thing in the movie, but like only occasionally. Like they don't really, they make a couple references to him being behind the times, but also it seems like he's still really, really good and everyone thinks he's amazing and stuff. It doesn't seem like people are unimpressed by him even though he's behind the times, but it does come up a couple times that he like fails to embrace the new technology. And it doesn't seem like that's why his restaurant failed, or why he burned out in Paris the first time. So it's kind of like a recurring theme, but also doesn't seem to be like super well integrated, I felt like.
Well, maybe it's a minor element to Adam's just character growth over the course of the movie. Because, you know, from where he started, we don't see he has sobered up and now he's like looking for redemption and achieving the third star. And this is just another element along the way. Like he's shedding who he used to be and becoming a new person.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. But the like technology behind the times element just doesn't seem to be a big part of it.
No, because the old food, who could tell the difference? I don't know.
I guess there is a sense of like he needs to trust his, so he brings in his like super team of people. So like in the movie, what actually happens, right? We should sort of discuss that briefly. Is like he goes to an old friend in London, Tony, little Tony, who's a hotel manager.
Yeah.
Of his father's hotel, it seems like. And they have a hotel restaurant. And he sort of goes around London and insults the restaurant. And then gets a food. He asks to take it over. And the guy says no. And then he goes to a food critic and tells her to come review the restaurant. And tells the guy that unless he lets him cook for the food critic, his restaurant will be embarrassed because they're bad, I guess. So then he gets to take over. He gets the guy to renovate the restaurant for him and make it like super fancy, like the kitchen. And it seems like the other part. Then he recruits his like super team of, you know, guys he used to know, some guy named Michelle, who he used to work with in Paris, in whose restaurant I think he sabotaged with like a box of rats.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
His friend Max, who is in jail and is in the movie, but I don't think has any lines. some younger chef named David, who he says needs to, like, he's, that's Lily James's boyfriend in this movie, the one explaining the Yoda thing. And he was serving maybe street food. And he seems to look up to Adam and, but he gets recruited and then doesn't get to talk for the rest of the movie. And then he goes to another restaurant and recruits Helene, who is the sous chef at some other restaurant, who is like the one person who like isn't charmed instantly by him, but also seems to respect his reputation or abilities or something, and comes to work with him when he offers her triple her old salary, and then that gets doubled. So they're paying her, it seems like, a ton of money, you'd have to imagine. If she was making any money before, she's now making six times that. And he that becomes his love interest, I guess. That's the Anamilla's character. And they cook, right? And then basically it's just him running the kitchen and trying to get a Michelin star. And they have a shitty first opening. And then they get better over time. There's also like a drug dealer plot. Like he owes some drug dealers money. And they come and beat him up at some point. And then his ex-girlfriend, who's John Luke's daughter, pays them back.
Yeah, that happens. It's
not, so like, this movie is full of people who love this guy, who is nothing but an asshole the whole movie.
Total piece of shit.
I'm sure he's very talented at cooking, the movie tells us. But we as an audience can't, like, taste the food. And the food all looks like sort of that stupid expensive food that you see.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
So, like, my father used to have a restaurant. And one day, me and our friend Braden went there. And Braden, you know, is sort of a picky eater. And there wasn't much on the menu for Braden. So he ordered, like, a salad. But it was, like, one of those deconstructed salads. And when they deliver it to him, it's just, like, a few strips of lettuce and then some, like, you know, celery or whatever, just on a plate. Just a few things on a plate. And it's just, like, this was an expensive, like, fancier restaurant. And it just seemed like the more expensive the restaurant, the, like, sillier and less practical the food seemed to get. You know? I've always been someone who, like, the best food I've ever had is just, like, the cooking my mother used to do. And it's, you know, if you ever ask her how to make it, she's like, well, I put the thing in the oven and I threw some salt and pepper on it. And you're like, okay, well, that makes sense. And you go to a restaurant and you try to get like a $50 meal and you're like, this doesn't taste good. This is bad. They did a bad job of making, you know, pasta. you know, so I guess I'm not like a foodie is what I'm saying.
Yeah, me neither. And
so like it's, again, you can't taste the food. The food all looks... Early on in the movie, he meets the girl at Burger King and is like, why does our food cost so much more than Burger King? And he's like, you can't justify it. This is working class food. This is good made by... Burger King is good, maybe, but it's too consistent. We want inconsistent food that gets you to great taste, but is always a different experience. And that doesn't really come back up. Like... Nowhere later in the movie does it justify why this food is so expensive. Like, you know, okay, so have you ever seen The Devil? You've seen The Devil Wears Prada. There's that scene, and I think it's a divisive scene, because it can go either way,
okay.
Where Miranda Priestly, is it Priestly or Presley? It's Priestly.
Priestly, yeah.
Priestly explains to Anne Hathaway, who's being kind of like arrogant about the whole fashion thing, it's the cerulean blue scene, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's not blue. It's cerulean, which was in a spread of, you know, the spring catalog for Yves Saint Laurent. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, so she explains why high fashion stuff is important or influential or whatever.
Yeah, that color was hand-selected for you. You thought it was just out of a bin. No, we fucking did that to you just 18 months ago.
Right. So in this movie, they, like, never really justify why any of this stuff matters. So it all seems really frivolous to me, at least. Because, like, throughout the movie, this guy gets handed all kinds of stuff. And he gets to take over a restaurant. He gets the guy to renovate the restaurant. He gets his drug dealers paid off by his ex-girlfriend who he had impregnated and left. Or maybe he didn't impregnate her because she doesn't have it. It doesn't look like she had a kid, but something could have happened to it. And then she didn't come to the guy's. He didn't come to the guy's funeral, but she still comes back, pays off his debts, and then leaves. Just fucks right out of the movie. And yeah, he just gets a lot of stuff given to him for seemingly no reason in pursuit of what is a vanity project. Which is certainly not helping the world in any way. Just making this restaurant to serve... It's weird that he doesn't have, like, a signature dish that they discuss at any point, or, like, something interesting about him that seems like he's sort of... At some point, Matthew Reese's character mentions, like... Or is it Helene or Matthew Reese's character? Who mentions that, like, he needs to... He's the one who pushes forward so they can all, you know, sort of follow... Like, he sort of pushes the boundaries of things.
Yeah, that's what Matthew Reese says.
But it also seems like he doesn't adapt to new technology. It seems like he's, like, not pushing the boundaries. It's unclear, yeah, like, why you should care about this guy at all. Like, this guy's just handed a bunch of stuff in pursuit of a, you know, frivolous vanity project, and then succeeds eventually. And it's just like, well, I guess that's cool, but, like, why are we all so invested in this guy's, you know, third Michelin star? Like, why do we care about this? Why is this important? And the movie makes no argument for that. It, yeah, does about the Burger King early on, and then it just, like, never comes back. It's never like, this is why this matters, you know? It never makes the case for itself, I feel like.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, funny enough, though, like, yesterday I had Burger King for the first time in, like, 2 years, and then watched Burnt late at night, and he was also eating Burger King. I was like, hey, I had that fantastic peasant cuisine earlier today. It was great.
Right, yeah, the French peasant cuisine, working, working class meal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's just supposed to marvel at how much dedication it takes to be a three Michelin star chef. Because, like, you got to hand it to him. He at some point in the movie, they're reminiscing about the time they spent at Jean-Luc's restaurant in Paris. And they're like, yeah, we were working 6 days a week, 20-hour days. And that's not even as the head honch guy. That's just as a member of the team.
Yeah.
And I think Marco Pierre White, you know, is on record stating that I think that's common among these crazy chefs, because I feel like so much of it, it requires that much dedication, because you have to be involved in every step of the way. Like, you can't trust somebody else to be doing it. You can only trust other people and their techniques so far. But in terms of selecting the right fish, in terms of making sure that the fish is cut in the right way, like, there's so much that you have to be involved with. It's not a numbers thing. It's a strive for perfection. And with that, you have to be involved with many steps along the way. So I get it. Like, yeah, it would drive me to insanity if I had to spend 120 hours a week doing something, shucking oysters, maybe. Yeah, all for what? To make sure that my cucumbers were 2 millimeters thick?
Yeah. So, a lot of good thoughts there. What I'll say is, I think all that's nonsense. I think anytime someone claims to work 120 hours a week, they are lying. They have maybe worked 120 hours one time, and then have just projected it over the course of several years. Because, like, absolutely no, they didn't. That's not a real thing. Makes no sense. Why would you be in a... First of all, why would you do that? Second of all, you couldn't do that. That's not true. If anyone can prove to me that they worked 120 hours a week for 3 years, please send that to me. That'd be fantastic. I'd love to see it. I'd be very interested in seeing how your life was and why you did that. I'd love to hear that. Second of all, like, can you not trust your team to also cut your fucking fish? At the end of the movie, that's, like, his thing. Is, like, he tries to do it by himself, but then he works better as a team. But also, like, why? Why is cooking somehow the most serious thing in the world? Why would they need to work more than doctors somehow in order to cook a piece of fish? Like, does anyone believe that? Like, that's my problem with all these, like, cooking shows. And, like, this and The Bear, right? The main ones I've seen. But it's so fucking self-serious, and it never makes a good argument for why it needs to be. It's just like, they take it incredibly seriously, and then you're like, I don't know if this is that big of a deal. It's just food. And they're like, no, it is a big deal. You have to trust me. But it's not. It's not a big deal. And, like, other people can do that. There are other good chefs, I'm sure. I really do wonder how this would stand up to, like, a blind taste test, if you could tell the difference between Adam Jones's oysters and all the other... Like, he needs to hire these really talented people. He had to assemble his, like, squad of hand-picked people, but then doesn't think they can do anything, and just sort of acts like an asshole the whole time. And, like, again, so one another thing I hate, I don't even like when people go to, like, school and get, like, a PhD and then want you to call them doctor.
Oh, that's, like, they're not doctors.
Well, no, but that's not my thing. But
oh.
But as if like you getting a title from a university that I'm not a part of means that I should call you by like a formal title because you think you've earned it somehow. Like as if other organizations can grant you a title that I'm supposed to use. And this movie does like the same thing. It's like, you know, you see like what like sports people, they like have to be called coach. It's like, but you're coaching like high school basketball. Like, it's not that serious. Why do you have a special thing? You know, I don't call every teacher or professor. That'd be weird. But then these chefs, they call them chef.
And oh, yeah. Yes, chef.
When the other guy takes over, they actually just say, yes, David. They don't call him chef when he's running the kitchen for a day. So it's like a title. But it's like, why? Why is this the job with a title? You know? Like, you don't say, like, yes, foreman when you're doing construction. You know? It's just, like, the stupidest, self-serious thing. It's like, everyone pretends it's important for some reason. But, like, it's not, though. And the movie doesn't even pretend it is. Like, it does, but then it, like, stops. It, like, never, like, it can't full-throatedly do that because it obviously isn't. I didn't like this about the Bay either, where everyone's like, oh, it's so realistic. Look at how the guy's screaming and is acting like an asshole. I was like... I've worked in a restaurant. Like, there are certainly people acting like assholes, but it's not, like, a necessary part of operations, you know? If, like, we don't have that guy that day, we're not like, oh, fuck, we need someone to start screaming. Otherwise, how's the food going to get made? Like, that's not a thing that anyone needs. These are just people being fucking obnoxious. And, like, it's being tolerated because he's talented, but he's, like, humiliating his staff by making them apologize to the fish for cooking it poorly. And I don't know. He's... You know, people are working, again, long hours and being screamed at, and he just smashes stuff. Like you said, Matthew Reese just smashes up his whole restaurant occasionally. Like, it's an amount of temper tantrums that would seem outrageous in any other industry. But, like, it's cool here because he's a chef, and if he, you know, we need him to cook a really good piece of lamb. Like, that's not a thing anyone needs. It's like, you can get good food all over the place. Like, there's not like a shortage of good food. Like, no one needs this, and you can tell because most people will never eat in a Michelin star restaurant. Like, this is not essential. This is not even like worthwhile, I think. You know, I think, like, again, like, I understand it's like an art form, I guess, but like, this is, it's so unnecessary, and it's like treated as if it's like, oh, well, you know, everyone just has to, like, yes, he's yelling, but like, there's never like a comeuppance for that, you know. Like, the girl quits and then comes back because the guy just offers her more money. It's like the consequences for his actions. The only thing he really does that has any consequences, he had a severe heroin addiction, and then even though he could pay it off, he just declines to. So I guess like not paying off your drug dealers is like the main obstacle in this movie, but like. Just, like, running around yelling and just, like, needing to be called chef and, like, it's just, I just, like, hate this sort of, like, culture that's always in these movies that's, like, presented sort of, I don't want to say uncritically, but, like, not as critically as it could be. Because, like, the pursuit of it is made to seem, like, super worthwhile. Like, oh, if we do this right, we can have a restaurant that serves really expensive food for an exclusive clientele. And you're like, oh, cool. I was hoping rich people could go eat at, like, expensive restaurants. Like, if that didn't happen, like, what? Like, this is obviously a worthwhile endeavor then. If, like, some rich French people or rich, I guess, British people in this can have, like, another restaurant to go spend a ton of money on. Like, that's wild, yeah. I mean, fuck that Burger King. Like, those people are fucking working class.
I mean, just to clarify, and I don't mean this to be disparaging because I also don't have Michelin star restaurants, but I've never actually been in a Michelin star restaurant nor worked in one. Our restaurant experiences have just been like, hey, we're going to serve good food and it's going to be reasonably priced and, you know, you can get in and out efficiently and you don't have to wear any particular clothing. Like, it was just, you know, down to fucking earth restaurants. But, you know, maybe people revere this type of, I don't know, unhinged chef character because of the popularity that Gordon Ramsay's gotten in recent years, maybe Margot Pierre White. But yeah, you're right. Like, screaming isn't a prerequisite to serve good food or probably even to have a Michelin star restaurant. Like, I don't know. Is Bobby Flay a maniac? Emeril Lagasse? Mario Batali? You know, I don't think these people are completely unhinged. I think there's just like normal people that know how to make good food and probably could earn a star.
Gordon Ramsay is also just playing like up his yelling for the TV character, specifically in the American versions of shows. He's actually like a lot chiller in like the UK versions. That's just sort of an American character he does. you know, I understand like that's like a popular chef archetype, and actually he helped produce this movie, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. This presentation, like, again, yes, we haven't worked in, like, I guess, super fine dining restaurants. But it, like, is the, like, I want someone to come forward and say, like, it is essential that I yell at my staff and humiliate them and treat them very disrespectfully. Otherwise, I cannot cook a really good meal. Like, I want one of these chefs to come forward and say that. Like, not only should I be allowed to act like a huge asshole, but, like, I need to. Otherwise, your lamb is not going to come out correctly. Like, you think you're tasting seasoning, but it's actually the screaming I was doing at my chef because they cut the potato or the tomatoes a millimeter too thick.
I will, you know, say that obviously the focal point of this movie is the activities in the kitchen. But I think what is equally as important, you know, borderline more important, is the experience from stepping foot in the door. And that's why they split it front of the house, back of the house. So it's the service. The service element is 50% of this Michelin star, whereas the focal point of this movie makes you think it's all about the food, and it's just not that way. So they allude to it insofar as they, like, apparently Michelin star reviewers have patterns. Like, they won't tell you they're the Michelin star raters, but it'll always be two guys in their mid to late 40s or something, or mid 40s. One will arrive 30 minutes early, sit at the bar. The other will, I don't know, place a fork underneath his table to see if somebody notices. They'll get tap water. One will get the tasting menu and the other will get the chef's choice. I don't fucking know. But they have like these habits that you can seemingly identify them. But a lot of what they're doing and looking for is like, how does the wine pair with the food? You know, how was I greeted at the door? What was my weight like? Did they notice the details? How was my fork, you know, I don't know, 30 millimeters away from my plate like it should be? I don't know. Are they measuring whenever they get to the table? But my point is, a lot of it happens at the table outside of the kitchen, whereas the focal point of this movie is in the kitchen and makes you think that earning 3 stars can be entirely done in the kitchen, and that's just not the case.
So I feel like there's like a hostess character who we see a couple times and is like presented in the movie as a little bit like she's given a little bit of camera time that makes it seem like she's supposed to be maybe a bigger character, and it seems like maybe she was cut down in editing.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if she's the hostess or the waiter, but it seems like maybe there was more... Because, like, when we see the front of the house, like, when we see the actual restaurant, it looks like a very small, like, room.
Yeah, it's not expansive.
It's a hotel restaurant. It's, like, a really small... It seems like, I don't know, maybe they shouldn't have, like, a confidence in that set, or... didn't feel like using it, but yeah, we don't see a lot of that at all. I mean, the fork thing, they say like they put a fork on the floor to see if you'll notice, so it seems like some of that is meant to be like the attention to detail. But yeah, also the Michelin, so they end up getting the Michelin, so they have like a fake out where they think there's a Michelin star reviewers, they serve them a bad meal because Michelle sabotaged it in revenge. Really played the long game with this guy.
Yeah.
Comes to work with him, gets yelled at and humiliated.
The amount of shit he had to eat in order to get that cayenne pepper revenge.
Yeah. And it's sort of interesting. So at some point he's like, Bradley Cooper's assembling the meal for the reviewers. And he's like tasting everything. But Michelle says, he's about to do something for Michelle. And Michelle's like, no, I took care of it. I did it myself.
Exactly how you like
Michelle.
It.
He trusted Michelle. And then Michelle afterwards reveals that he, you know, betrayed him. But then at the end, so like in this one, you know, Bradley Cooper's doing almost everything except he trusted Michelle in that particular instance. And at the end, you know, when they succeed, they have the real reviewers come in. He like is like, okay, we need to do more teamwork now. But it's like he got burned by trusting the other guy. it wasn't like his individual meal wasn't good enough. It was like the other guy was like, no, I took care of it. And it turns out the guy had sabotaged it. So.
Yeah, whenever he did, I was like, is this restaurant in Nassau? But yeah, the betrayal. It's like, if you're ever going for a Michelin star, word to the wise, have somebody imitate Michelin star reviewers to just see if there are any snakes among your team.
Yeah.
And just weed them out, you know? If they're going to sabotage it, they're going to do it that night, and then you can fire them and move forward.
So. It's always, the guy, like, shows his palm with, like, a bunch of pepper on it. It's like, oh, I did it. It's like, I guess if you wanted evidence all over your hands, I mean, you're confessing anyways.
Yeah. But, like, well, that sent Bradley Cooper into a spiral, and he starts drinking again, despite... Well, that's something they didn't explain, right? Because he's supposed to meet with Emma Thompson, who's the doctor who draws blood and tests for alcohol and drugs. But he definitely goes on a bender, and then there's no recourse from that, and I thought that was going to be a deal breaker. Did the movie ever reconcile that?
No, I mean, he goes to see Matthew Rhys, he gets led into his kitchen, starts screwing around. Matthew Rhys, like, puts him to sleep, then cooks him a meal the next day, and is like, you're so cool, and you're a better chef than me, and you're really cool. And then he goes to see Emma Thompson, is like, I'm sorry I refused
to do group therapy
the whole time, yeah. But now I'll do therapy. It's been a tough day for me because of the betrayal and the drinking. And the Michelin star, and now only have 2 Michelin stars or whatever. Like, I don't know. Now I still have a successful restaurant, but I got sabotaged that one time. And yeah, I guess he then, is this when he talks to Helene and they become in a relationship?
I think they rekindle the relationship at that point.
Did they have a relationship before then? I guess he took her as, like, a date to a thing.
Yeah, buying, like, fish in the market at 5 a.m.?
No, but he took her as a date to the restaurant.
Oh, yeah, to Matthew Reese's reopening after he destroyed it.
Yeah, and saw, like, that's when he sees his ex-girlfriend. Oh, Alicia Viklander is the ex-girlfriend. I don't know if you mentioned her when you talked about the famous cast.
I didn't. What's she in? Is she famous?
She's, I think, most famous for Ex Machina. She's the lead in that.
Oh, okay.
She's in a few other things, but I think she's that's like her biggest thing. Tomb Raider. She was the newest Tomb Raider. She was in The Green Knight. She was in a few things, but I think, yeah, she's very famous for that. And yeah, I mean, then the movie ends with him like getting the star by doing teamwork, which I guess was also a thing he needed to do because he didn't trust his team, but. Not that he like didn't trust his team, because he wanted these specific people, but he just felt like he needed to do it all himself. But it turns out he didn't need to do it all himself.
Yeah, teamwork makes the dream work.
But like, wouldn't it make more sense if he had failed before, because he tried to do it all himself, and just it wasn't good enough? Like he was behind he was too behind the times, or. You know, he didn't trust his team and he couldn't get the meal ready and they waited too long because he was, you know, taking too much time because he wouldn't let anyone do anything.
No, I think the progression is the opening night of the restaurant is he tried to do it all himself. Then he failed and he ended up blaming the very small role that everyone else played. And that's the start of it. Like he tried to do it all himself and he failed, ended up. The night was in ruins. He had to go on morning talk shows with his tail, but you know, contritely the next day, in order to, I don't know, offer free meals for the rest of the week in order to restore it. But that I think is rock bottom for him. And at that point, then he starts like branching out into trusting his team. And as soon as he does, he gets burned. And then he just leans into trusting his team more, but yeah, maybe that could have been more clearly defined if he's solely reliant on himself. And then in contrast, he relies on the team and then gets the third star. Yeah.
Which, I mean, the opening night is so far in the beginning, then. It just feels like for that to be the inflection point, it just, like, for his character growth, just would happen so early. That, like, his character is just fully grown after opening night. But then we just sort of, you know, have him sort of roll down, you know, roll to the finish from there, like, coast to the finish. It seems like the, you know, sort of climaxes of his character arc should happen later.
I don't think...
And I don't know, like... Yeah. Because he keeps saying he does, like, whenever he's talking to the therapist, he keeps saying, like, oh, I don't do the group thing. Like, him being, like, this, you know, individual rogue, whatever, is sort of part of his character. Until the end, when he goes to her for the help, and he goes to Matthew Rhys, and he, you know... I mean, the whole movie, he's relying on other people. It just, like, isn't acknowledged that much, because, again, the guy just gave him the whole restaurant to run. It's not like he worked his way up from anything. And, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, because, again, it's not like he fails the first Michelin star when he is trying to, like, micromanage. And at the end, he's like, no, we do it as a team. Like, because there's a change in his behavior between the first time he thinks he's a Michelin star and the second time. But there's not any, like, change in... There's not necessarily a change in the outcome. Because the outcome was due to, like, sabotaging. But that wasn't due to too little trust. That was due to maybe excessive trust. You know, so it seems like, I don't know what the lesson that's supposed to be learned between those two points are. Like, it's set up as a contrast between these two scenes, but the contrast doesn't make a ton of sense in the context of his, like, arc.
Yeah. Well, is you only get one shot at the, like, that's what it seems like. You start a restaurant and then, I don't know, 2 months later, the Michelin reviewers come, and that's like, that's your one opportunity. And if you don't get the 3-star rating, what, do you just close the restaurant at that point?
Yeah, can you just, like, rebrand? Because this was a restaurant in the hotel before. There was just, like, a shitty restaurant. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Michelin star people just not even bother with it before? Or, like, is it like a every year thing they review it?
I think there's an element, because what we know of the TV show The Bear never actually achieved the rating. He just maintained the rating. Right? So there is sort of a every year they put out this book, and maybe it's every 2 years. Yeah, every so often they come back to make sure that the restaurant is up to snuff, and then they publish out the new book. So, yeah, he makes it seem like it's the end of the world, which, what's the worst thing that happens? He has to do this for another 12 months and refine his craft. He spent 3 years shucking a million oysters. It's like, is this really going to be that bad for you to do presumably what you're passionate about and what you love for the next 12 months?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the thing. Like, because he's going to continue working at the restaurant, right?
Yeah, but he's so devastated that he presumably fucked this Michelin star rating up. I don't know, he's, like, willing to throw in the towel and, like, retire as a chef. That's how devastated he is that Michelle sabotaged it.
Yeah, like, this whole movie is, like, an advertisement for the Michelin Guide.
For sure.
Because it seems so important somehow. And, like, it's the entire measure. It's never at the end, like, oh, like, no one ever says. Like, he gets a second chance at the Michelin thing. It's never like, oh, well, you didn't achieve this one particular measure of success, but you've achieved other measures of success, or you still can make really good food, or have the respect of your fellow chefs, or whatever. Like, any other measure of success. It's all just like, no, this Michelin star thing is actually really fucking, you wouldn't believe how important this is. And reading about this, like, one of the reasons it's only in a few places is, like, the countries seem to have to pay to be included. So, like, the tourism authorities of various countries will pay, and in various states in America, will pay to be included in this book.
And oh, it's like pay to win?
Well, it's paid for the state to be included, so for them to inspect your state. to inspect your country, which is why when we were reading it and we only saw like a few countries, it was like, oh, well, I guess these aren't good enough. But it was like, no, they just don't like inspect every country unless you pay them. So.
Huh. Okay.
Like, they've done 3,000 restaurants in France, but only, like, you know, 1,500 in America, which is obviously a much bigger country. You know, and they've done 1,500 in Japan, 2,000, but, like, 2,000 in Italy, which is also a small country. You know, I don't think China's even, oh, China is on the list, but they only have four Michelin, or four 3 stars, but doesn't list how many restaurants they've surveyed there.
Wow. I mean, what a job to just be a food critic, you know? Just go around and eat fucking sliced cucumbers on a bed of smoke that has, you know, scented like celery. I don't fucking know. I don't want to eat any of this food.
We're not foodies, right?
Yeah.
But, like, do people like this stuff?
I think people like the idea of this stuff.
Like, if I was, like, hungry, and I wanted to go for, like, a meal, like, would I have a really good meal? Like, am I going to get, like, a dining experience? Like, I don't know if you've seen the movie The Menu, where they serve, like, this, you know, sort of high-class food. And at the end, the girl just asks for, like, a hamburger.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like, yeah, like, I would just, like, you can have good hamburgers and bad hamburgers, I guess. But, like, that's what I'd be looking for, right? It's just, like, a good version of food I eat. Not, like, what's the most complicated presentation of this food, you know? And, like, I, you know, like, for, like, if you go to, like, a higher-end steakhouse, they just give you, like, a nice steak, right? They're not just, like, giving you some kind of screwy version of a steak, are they?
Yeah, I don't think so.
It's not like a deconstructed steak. It's just like, oh, here's a well-cooked steak, I imagine.
Here's a good cut of meat that's been aged for however long. And, yeah, it's got this high-quality butter to it and this pepper from fucking, I don't know, deep in the heart of India. I don't, yeah.
Like, I think for most people, the best tasting food is probably the food with, like, the most butter on it. You know, like, if you go, like, if you try to cook, if you ever cooked pancakes at home, right? They don't usually come out that great. But if you go to, like, any breakfast place, right?
Yeah.
And order pancakes, they're usually going to be, like, way better than your pancakes. And, like, you know, it's going to taste a million times better. And I think a lot of that's just, like, they just grill it up with some butter.
100%.
And, like, I'm sure there's, like, some technique to it at literally every diner I've ever been to in my life, you know, that they've all learned this technique. But, like, a lot of times I think it's just, like, I don't know. They just make it, you know, it's just, like, they make a decent pancake and it's, like, not a big deal. They just throw some butter on it. I mean, I used to have, like, there used to be a restaurant at the student center when I went to school. And, like, everything tasted great. And I think the lady just put, like, half a stick of butter on the grill before she cooked everybody's meal. And, like, that's most of what you were tasting. It's like, yeah, that's fantastic. And, like, I can't imagine, like, you get more Michelin stars versus just more sticks of butter. You know? But, like, that's, like, I think what people would like in terms of their food's taste. You know? So.
It's a dining experience.
Yeah, but is it, though? Like, so, like, I'll never go to a restaurant if I have to wait. I mean, I don't go to restaurants at all, I guess. But when I did, like, I thought waiting for a restaurant was always, like, the stupidest thing in the world.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It was, like, there was never a restaurant that was enough better than a different restaurant that I wanted to wait for the first restaurant.
The only way I would be willing to wait is if the amount of time they said it was going to be would, you know, the travel time and parking time to get to a different restaurant would have been more than that. That's the only time I'm willing to wait for it.
Yeah, like, I just want to be at the table the quickest.
Yes.
Like, you probably don't remember this, but when I was near a college, we used to go to something called Half Off, which was like at 11 o'clock at night, you could go and the entrees would be half off, right?
Yeah, after 11 p.m.
So at like 10 o'clock, we'd all go over and there'd be a huge line of people waiting to get in at 11, but not at 10 because it wasn't half off at 10. And we'd all sit out there waiting like a bunch of morons.
In the cold.
Yeah. And we'd be waiting there. And the food there was okay. But the food there also was like $10 an entree.
Yes.
So to each save about $5, we would go stand out in the cold for over an hour. And it was like, what is the thought process here? You know, are we all just stupid? And I think it was like, yes, we were, I guess.
Especially eating at a non-dinner time, you know?
Yeah, it's like, why are we going outside of when we'd want to eat to stand outside to save, again, like $5 a person? You know, money that, like, wasn't insignificant, but also, like, wasn't significant. Again, so who knows? Here's the other thing. It's not like we don't have a good system of translating time to money. That's actually, like, a transaction that happens all the time. You know, that's, like, one of those common transactions in the world.
Yeah, trading time for money.
Yeah. So, like, we all know that doing something for an hour is not worth $5. Right? Like, $5 is not worth that amount of time. But yeah. Somehow. So the point is that, like, waiting in line for restaurants always seems stupid. Like, restaurants always seem so slow. Like, I don't know. I like going to restaurants and, like, screwing around all day. Like, I'm big, like, hanging out at the table and just, you know, hanging out for hours.
Yeah.
So I don't like when restaurants are trying to, like, turn over my table. I just sort of want to, like, pay them to fuck off. But, like, yeah, I guess I just don't understand the restaurant. So my point is the restaurant experience is just not for me, I guess. Because, like, I'm satisfied with, I think, like, any... So I'm, like, very particular about my food. I mean, especially now, right? But even in the past, like, I'm always someone who, like, people will say they can't tell the difference between, like, Coke and Pepsi. You know, that was always, like, the craziest thing I've ever heard. But, like, even, like, small variations in foods, I feel like I can always taste the difference. Even when I get like packaged foods, if like, you know, there's certain batches that taste a little off, you know, I can always like taste that. Or I mean, I can taste it when I can taste it, I guess, you know, but I'm someone who like frequently will have that issue.
Yeah.
So I don't know. My feeling was always just like, you know, I'm pretty particular about food, but like any restaurant I've ever been to, if I like ate a meal, it was very rare I went to a restaurant and I was like, this is so bad. Like, this is noticeably better or worse than other restaurants. We used to go to, like, a place called Jill Mama's that served, like, a shrimp scampi that was, like, not particularly good, I guess. So, like, that was a restaurant that wasn't great. But most restaurants, if I go and, like, order a cheeseburger, it would, like, taste like a cheeseburger. And I'm sure there's some that are better or worse, but, like, I don't know. It'd always be, like, pretty good. And, like, I'd go to pizza places, and I like certain types of pizza, but, you know, most of the time you get pizza, it'd be, like, fine. You know, same with pasta dishes, hamburger. I mean, I'm not eating, like, super fancy stuff, but, like, you know, my favorite pasta and, you know, meatballs or whatever, again, I don't eat any of the stuff, so it's hard to tell, but it was always my mother's. Like, I just prefer my mother's version over anything. Like I said, I like, you know, pancakes at any restaurant. This feels like a tangent that I'm sort of getting on, but my point is just that, like, is there that much of a difference when you go to different restaurants? Like, do people like particular restaurants to the point that they're going to go and like wait and they care about how many stars they have? Like, is that a thing for people who just aren't me? Is that what I don't get about all this stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's less about the food and more about the experience, right? Because
what is the experience, I guess?
It's like, I don't know. Do you find yourself in art museums a lot looking at a painting? Because there's people that do that, and I couldn't fathom fucking doing that.
Wait, but like, I think they would say like, oh, the art is really cool, not like it's the looking experience that I'm going for.
I mean, there's some art experiences that are like, you had to be there. And there's some people that seek that out because they want to have been a part of it. I don't know. Like,
name one.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. Any art show. But I just feel like you go to an art exhibit, an art show, I totally buy that it's, you had to be there, and it requires the participation of the artist, and he sort of goes through and explains shit.
Is that what an art show is? The artist explains the art?
There's
are
also...
Are you making up a type of art show? Like, I'm sure that's a type of art show, but I don't think that's inherent in any given presentation. Like, I think a lot of these artists are dead. Like, I don't think most of the time the artist is going to explain their art to you, right?
Current artists, yeah.
That's what happens? They, like, come in and explain the art?
But there's... So, I have a coworker that has gone to this one restaurant down here a couple times, and it's, like, $300 a night.
That's insane.
Yes.
That's, like, your rent for the month in the South.
Yeah, it's cheap to live down here. Anyway, so... It's like $300 a person, and what they do is they come up with a tasting menu that is that all in the same theme, and it generally follows a musical artist. So he told me that he went to like a Jay-Z night, an Elton John night, and Prince maybe. And I don't know enough about Elton John or Prince, but the Jay-Z one apparently had a lot of like, oh, you can only get this ingredient from the Bronx, or, you know, this ingredient originated here.
So, what ingredient is native to the Bronx?
Heavy rat.
But just, like, the Bronx isn't, like, an agricultural center, is it?
No. I don't know what he fucking went there, and, you know, it was an experience for him. It's not that he took away some profound knowledge, but... He enjoyed being there, and maybe
that
that's
just sounds like a brand new way to fleece Jay-Z fans or something. Like that's right,
but it's all about the artist's interpretation of Jay-Z's music and how he translates that into food. And it's just like maybe this is a world that we just don't understand because I've never been in a Michelin star restaurant. I would never fathom paying $200 or $300, you know, for I don't know to get smoke wafted up my nose at the same time. You know, somebody throws a carrot halfway across the room. Like, I don't know what the fuck goes on here, but I don't want my food to melt. I just want me to be able to eat it with a fork and a knife, you know, or to pick it up like a sandwich and eat it. So this is just a world that we don't have exposure to. And until we commit to going to one of these restaurants and having this experience.
But it's not like I've never eaten before.
I know, but you've never eaten this. It's not about the food. It's about the
experience. But that was like an intentional choice.
That you've never chosen to do an experience as opposed to eating? Yeah.
I've had experiences eating. It's like I've looked at this and been like, this looks stupid. I'm not going to do it. It's not like I was unaware that you could go to expensive restaurants.
Yeah, there's people that seek that out for the
sake of... Like, okay,
no, okay.
So I like hibachi grills.
Okay.
Which is a dining experience. Because that's like fun.
And it doesn't cost $300.
Yeah. I mean, it can if you buy all their shrimp. But it doesn't usually. So, like, this restaurant didn't have a hibachi grill, you know, in Burnt. This wasn't, like, fun. It was just, like, people sitting at a table. There were no, like, performers. Like, I don't know. It was, like, what is the experience here for this fine diet? It seems to be eating small portions of, like, weirdly presented food. It's not even, like, exotic food. He's like, oh, this is a cut of fish that I got from the fish market. It's like, that's, like, sure, I guess, but, like, you're just making fish. Like, it's not like you went, you know, deep sea diving and got me a giant squid to eat, and I was like, okay, well, I can't get this anywhere. This is an experience, you know?
But I think it's pairings with the wine. I think it's attention to detail in the front of the house.
There's just no way the average person can tell... wine apart.
I know.
And then also can tell if it pairs well with, again, their fish from the fish market.
100%. Yeah, I'd say 95% of the people that go to these restaurants are just doing it to say they did it. Because they're just, they're bougie.
Sure, okay. But, like, the movie isn't presenting it like that, though. The movie is, like, making this seem like a real thing.
Yeah, I get... Yeah, but...
I'm just saying, like, what is... Give me an experience. Like, is it dinner and a show? You know? I'll do that. Like, I'm not someone who doesn't like entertainment. It's just, like, they seem like... If it's going to be charging me more, I want, like, a giant portion of things, but these are small portions.
Yeah.
You know?
No, you and I have the same feelings about what we want out of a restaurant.
It's just, like, why even incorporate the food into the restaurant, it seems like?
Because it's a tasting menu. It's an experience. No, but like,
why even bother with the food? The food doesn't seem to be at all part of it. It actually seems to be a huge distraction from the experience.
Yeah, you know? In some ways. But the fish that he... It wasn't just your run-of-the-mill... It wasn't like cod or salmon. It's something called turbot. Have you ever had turbot?
No, but I don't think I've had cod or salmon.
Oh, okay. Well...
Have you had turbot? What is a turbot?
I have no fucking clue what a turbot is, but that's the point. Like, he gets very unique ingredients. And I've seen...
He got it from the fish market.
Yeah, but that guy flew it in from Japan overnight, and it's just he was only able to catch three turbots that night or something. It's
flounder.
Turbot is flounder?
It's just a stupid flounder, yeah.
Yeah, but very specific.
I've actually caught a very large flounder.
It's difficult to acquire, you know?
Is it? It says it comes from the Mediterranean Sea, the Black Sea.
Yeah, tough to get it fresh. I don't know, but it's, you know.
Is it, if you're in Europe, is it that hard to get stuff from the Mediterranean Sea?
I guess that's fair. Yeah, I forgot they were in London. Difficult to obtain ingredients presented, you know, paired well with wines. As you go through, like, you've never gone to a restaurant and said, I'll have the tasting menu. And until you or I do, I don't know that we can opine on, I mean, we can definitely say that the high fine dining is complete bullshit and we don't want any part of it. But, like, the intricacies of what's important and, I don't know, I don't think we'll fully comprehend it until we experience it. And even if we do experience it, we still may not get it because it's probably one of those, like, you gotta have some background knowledge, you know? That's why we're not Michelin star foodies, you know? Otherwise, we'd be saying, oh, I had a great fucking cheeseburger at this place. Yeah, give it a star.
Well, I don't think they let me put stuff in the book. No, my point isn't literally. Obviously, there's real life where, you know, we can have our various beliefs on, you know, food, foodies and whatever. I don't want to, like, pass judgment on foodies. But, like, the movie just makes no argument for this being important. In a movie that takes its, like, cooking very seriously, it just, like, never makes the argument. You know?
All outside of achieving 3 Michelin stars? As the creme de la creme being Yoda?
That's, like, the goal, but it never makes the argument for, like, why any of this venture is important or worth doing.
I mean, it's important for Adam. That's his sole mission.
It's not clear why.
What drives him to want a third Michelin star? Could it be competition with Matthew Reese?
Why is this cooking? Like, why is it cooking here? Like, why is that the thing? Why is the cooking taken so seriously and everyone just accepts that? You know, why is cooking the thing you get to be an asshole about? You know, I guess it's just like about the pursuit of perfection and greatness, I guess. But the movie makes the cooking seem very serious and important, but then just, like, never tells us why. You know, like, it's worth everyone catering to this guy so he can do great cooking. But it's like, is it, though? Like, is it worth it for everybody? Like, is anyone getting stuff out of this? You know, like, we don't even really see the customers have an experience and be like, oh my god, what an amazing experience. Like, I experienced something worthwhile. I don't ever see a customer, you know, do that. We really don't even see the customers, you know?
Not a focal point, yeah.
No, but well, it seems like it should be. It's like, what are we doing here?
So you've said the best food you've had has just been, you always prefer your mom's. But if you had one restaurant that is the best restaurant you've ever been to, what is it?
Oh, I don't...
You don't have a number one?
I don't even think I do. I don't think I've eaten at a restaurant in, like, 15 years.
Oh, wow. I had the opportunity when I went to visit my aunt in Tampa. There's a renowned steakhouse there. I don't know if it's a Michelin star or not, but it's called Burns. And it's an experience because you go from the bar and then you go to your table. Then they give you a tour of the kitchen, which is like an operation, so to speak. And then after that, you go up to the loft and you have dessert. And I'd say per person, it might have been $100, and this was 10 years ago. But it was pretty cool. I had the best item, singular item, that I've ever had. Otherwise, I wouldn't have thought, you know, this wouldn't come up. But the single best dish I've ever eaten in my life was at that restaurant, which is why I'll always remember it. And, like, I'm not keen on doing it again unless somebody were to vouch for it. You know, I'd probably go back to Burns if I were in Tampa, but I wouldn't go to, is it 11 Madison Park or 11 Madison Avenue in New York City? Like, is that the 3-star restaurant up there?
I think that is, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't care to seek that out. But who knows? Maybe I should. Because I remember Burns, you know?
Yeah. No, is that the best food you've had in a restaurant or just in general?
In general, yeah. The best singular dish was their beef tartare.
Really? Yeah. So, like, the top, like, 10... Maybe that's my problem. Is like, the top 10 food items I've ever had are things either, like, my family has cooked or I've cooked myself. Like my top 10 favorite meals, you know. You know, like, restaurant food always seems worse than food I could get at home, which is maybe why I just don't like restaurants. You know? I mean, there's foods that I like better from, like, I like pizza from restaurants better. And, like I said, pancakes. There's foods that, like, I struggle to make. But, like, in terms of, like a cheeseburger, the best cheeseburgers I've ever had are ones I've made.
You know? Okay.
By a wide margin, I think. You know? It's like, I think I'm, you know, more able to adapt to my particular tastes, I guess. So I remember when we were in Pittsburgh at some point, there was I think it made the top 4 of, like, the best burgers in the country. And we went to the zoo one day, and then we went to this place, and we waited a long time. It was a long wait. I remember that. And we eventually got in, and we all had burgers. And it was just, like, so okay. That afterwards, it was like, it would have been better if the burger was terrible. Because it was just such a non-experience going to, like, what was supposed to be one of these best burgers in the country. And just having what was the stone-averagest cheeseburger you've ever had in your life. I remember they brought out, like, this slip that, like, had a very... It had, like, all these different options, you know? And there was just, like, all these... And it was options, like, you wouldn't recognize the, like... like, it wasn't clear what they were from getting them. But I think we mostly got regular cheeseburgers, and maybe that was, like, the issue. It was, like, we just ordered burger with cheese.
Okay.
Like, all the crazy sauces and toppings maybe they could have done. But we all just had... Everyone walked out and was just like, yep, that was definitely a hamburger. Like, you know? So, I don't know. Again, maybe I just don't like restaurants, which is why all this stuff seems kind of dumb to me. But, and again, I don't want to knock stuff that other people like. But I just, like, expect the movie to make an argument for why this is important if they're going to make it, you know, make the characters, you know, all these, like, reasonable-seeming characters put so much emphasis on this and be treated so poorly and put up with all these chefs being destructive assholes, you know, as just, like, apparently a trait of a chef is just, like, at some point they're going to destroy the entire restaurant, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just going to deal with it.
I think I agree with you. It all boils down to preferences, because that's why I don't get alcohol outside of the house. The reason I go to a restaurant is
make
to get,
own.
Yeah. Cause I'll just, if I can buy Guinness and it's going to taste exactly the same as a Guinness that I buy at a restaurant, I'm not going to buy a Guinness at the restaurant cause I can just buy it at the grocery store.
So if you go out, you won't have a drink.
Correct.
See,
yeah.
I think you're just cheap.
I am cheap. I'm frugal as shit.
Right. But, like, I think I'm saying a different thing. Like, I don't think I don't, because, like, I was saying earlier, like, the half-off thing was a waste, because it was saving money at things. Like, you don't want to spend money to get food you think you could make at home. I just think the food I get at a restaurant is worse.
Yeah.
And, like, the experience, like, I like the restaurant experience, because it's a thing you can go out and do with people.
Yeah, but and like, that's what it's about, the experience.
Right, but the experience of just being with the people.
Gotcha, the food and restaurant is ancillary.
No, that again, that's like an impediment, even. That's why I said I don't know why they even bother with the food and these dining experiences. It seems like the experience, like you said, you went on a tour and did eat dessert and whatever. It seems like, I don't know, the tour and the dessert like could have been most of it. Apparently the food was very good, but, you know, there's just no way to tell.
Yeah.
You know, for me. I mean, obviously for you, it could be different.
Well, you know, if we talk about other media with chefs and shit, have you ever seen the show Top Chef?
I might have seen Top Chef. I've seen some of the cooking shows.
So this is basically the only reality TV that I can tolerate, is if it's a competition where you get to somebody that is an artist and they are at the top of their game and they have impressed the judges. Even if it's subjective, like I generally don't prefer subjectively graded things, but with this, like, I don't know, particularly with Top Chef, I think it's season 6, there's two brothers that are rivals that kind of, it's Adam and Matthew Reese here, and they just sort of one-up each other, but they are clearly, as you go through the season, they're just in a league that's entirely separate from everyone else. Everyone else is like, oh yeah, I run a barbecue joint in fucking Louisiana. And he's just like, I don't know. You can tell that they're cut from a different cloth, and they're introducing techniques and doing things that are just so far advanced, and they are pushing the boundaries. So seeing that, it makes me have an appreciation for this world. And yeah, I could see that. Not everyone appreciates it.
So I guess food is just such a tough medium for that, because the main quality of food, at least to me, is its taste. And you can't taste things through a TV screen. You know, like, I can observe, like, you know, if this was like an athlete, right?
Yeah.
Or if this was Whiplash, right? I can hear his jazz drumming. And, you know, not like it on the merits of it being jazz drumming. But, like, I can hear it. And if it's really good, you know, in a good movie, I should be able to tell the difference between him and the person who's, you know, in a league below him. Or if I see an athlete, you know, you can represent them being very good. Or, like, you know, even like an artist in a visual medium. You can see the art and be like, oh yes, that art is good and the other person's art is much better, you know? That's what you could, but like the food, it's just like, the people seem to think it tastes good, so it must be good. This guy's, oh my god, this food tastes even better though. This is the even better chef. It's like, how the fuck would I know? I'm looking at a screen, you know? And like, they don't even really show people eating the food. Like the taste of the food is like, it doesn't seem to come up.
Yeah, well, I think you're overlooking, like, Bradley Cooper's position, and I wanted to talk about this because I don't know what all these means. Like, apparently there's roles in a traditional French kitchen, saucier, chef de partie, you know, everyone has their part to play. But the pass is where Adam is the entire time, and he's the facilitator, expediter, he's the one who's plating everything. He just says, hey, I'll need a piece of fish in 2 minutes from now in order to send this plate of food out, and I'll also need some carrots from Steve, and I'll need some fucking, you know, minced onion from Joe over there, right? And then he puts it all together. So the artistry happens at the pass, and a lot of it is in the plating technique. Like, that is where... Because Adam's not, you know, throwing pans around. He's the one plating the food. And you're overlooking that as the element of the artistry that Adam brings to the table. He is both responsible for compiling the dish, presentation of the dish, and ensuring that every element of the dish is up to snuff. Like, if the cucumbers aren't 2 millimeters thick, right, he throws the plate across the room and says, Steve, you fucked up, you know? So, like, that is where the action happens. Yes, you don't taste the food, but you can see on screen a lot the presentation of the food, him placing the flower petals and everything in a very particular way, him spooning out the oil and drizzling it. Like, that is the thing that you just described. So it's in there.
You know, that part is in there. He does a lot of like licking his fingers as he's putting stuff on the plate with his hands, which
it's, it's not sanitary.
Which is really weird. But like, so have you ever seen like Bob's Burgers? They have a table setting competition. And that seems to be what you're describing here in terms of what fine dining is, where they would set tables with different themes. Like, I get at some point he's like putting the garnishes on in just the most visually appealing way, but like the movie doesn't even like it focuses on him doing that, but doesn't really show that afterwards in a way that I could be like, oh my god, that's some impressive garnishing, you know. I just don't know like how I'm supposed to be impressed by anything he's doing, other than just characters telling me he's really, really good at it. Like, it's, his talent is so informed. He doesn't even like show an understanding of cooking that's beyond other people, you know. He'll occasionally like tell people what ingredients they got wrong for some reason, but that seems to be mostly a taste thing. He'll just be like, oh, you put too much lemon juice in it. And it's like the person will be really angry. They're like, fuck you, I didn't put that. You know what I mean, that's great.
You didn't dry out the pepper before you ground it.
Yeah, you got to do this like more complicated technique that tastes zero, does not taste different. No one could tell the difference, but we insist that it's important. Again, like, because again, this is like 20 hour day work week they do. Like, it's all fake, but also like even the stuff that wasn't fake definitely seems like they're just making work for themselves. You know?
Yeah.
It's like they could make this exact same meal and sprinkle the garnish. Like, he did the garnishing very fast, and we wasn't spending 20 hours a week doing that. You know? That took 30 seconds. So, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. This all seems like, I mean, again, so in the Devil Wears Prada scene, when they talk about the civilian, I think my understanding of the movie was always supposed to be like, oh, this is why the fashion world is actually important. Right?
Yeah.
But like, when I watch that, I'm just like, oh, this is actually of very little consequence. Even their like best argument for this is just like, if it wasn't for us, you'd be wearing a different colored shirt. And you're like, oh shit. Like that was like the mic drop for them. And you're just like, yeah, no, that doesn't matter though. Like, I don't care if the blue on my shirt is different. Like, I wouldn't notice, you know? But in the movie, like, you were supposed to be like, okay, like, this is why it's important. It affects the culture in a much broader way than we, you know, that Anne Hathaway's character realized. But this doesn't even make that argument. It literally never tells you why restaurant shit's important. It generally doesn't show why it's important. It doesn't show why Bradley Cooper has anything interesting to say about restaurant culture. Because again, he's like the behind the times guy who's apparently pushing them forward by not adopting new technology, and like going to shuck oysters and then walking out one morning when the guy yells at him to come back. So he just sort of left them stranded. That it made him seem like an asshole right from the beginning. And like, yeah, I just don't know why we need Bradley Cooper's, I think his name is Adam Jones in this. Yep. His insight into this world that, again, he doesn't appear to have any insight. I don't know why we need the insight. He doesn't appear to have any insight. And even if he did have a lot of insight into fine dining, I don't think that's important. So it's like, I don't know. This type of movie, I'm just like, I don't know. This is, make an argument. Make an argument so I can disagree with it. But you haven't even made the argument here. So it just frustrates me, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this one got 6.6 on IMDb, 28% Rotten Tomatoes. You know, I wouldn't watch it again, but I guess I don't regret having watched it. I think it tells enough of a story for me. I wouldn't say it's a good movie, but I don't think it's a bad movie. You know, I think I'd give this one an uncle.
I think it's a bad movie. It's a bad movie for stupid people. I just, like, I hate this type of shit. It just, I don't know. It's
well,
like this whole thing is just, like, the self-indulgent people yelling chef. Like, I hate everything about that stuff.
Oh, this is not as egregious as The Bear. Like, The Bear is terrible. And
that is a TV show for people who, listen, I don't understand how people watch that. I tried it. I know people like it. It's just one of those things that I can't, maybe I would have to experience being in a restaurant, which I guess I have been. I'd have to experience working in a restaurant where a self-important man insists on being called chef while making food at a roast beef joint or something and taking it like really seriously.
Yeah, I think you might have too much animosity for the TV show The Bear to have.
I do. I have a ton of animosity
enjoyed
for that show.
The movie Burnt in the slightest.
Maybe.
I think you're giving it too harsh a rating after because you hate The Bear so much. And I get why you hate The Bear. Like, I'm with you there.
But, like, this is also...
It's similar to The Bear, but it's not the same. It's different. At least this you didn't have to fucking wait an entire season's worth of television to get, you know, through the end of this one.
I wish they just made a really good roast beef joint in that, rather than being like, oh no, actually we want to do fine dining instead. You know? What if they just, like, made really good roast beef?
Like they had for the last three decades?
You know? And then it wasn't... Well, you know, but the guy came in, because Kami came in, and he's like, you know, what if he just came in and, like, did the best thing he could in a situation, rather than be like, oh, we found a bunch of money. What if we just, like, became a fine dining restaurant? It's like, what? What is this? Why are we doing this? You know?
Yeah.
Like,
no.
Let's make other things worthwhile. Like, is there only one way to make, like, you know, high-level food? Can you not make a high-level pizza? You know?
I think it would have to be, like, breadsticks that are...
Like, if you're the best chef in the world, like, and you're trying to make, like, oh, this is the best pizza in the world, does it have to be, like, oh, yeah, this is a breadstick, and then I had some finely cut tomatoes, and then here's, like, a nice block of mozzarella, and this is the best pizza in the world type of thing? Like, is that what can you not just, like, be really good at cooking pizza, and that's, like, the epitome of a type of chef? Or is that just, like, a local maximum that is not... Like, that's not fine. That's not, like, a good chef. That's just, like, a fucking idiot.
Yeah, it's the difference between food from restaurants that you and I would bother going to versus fine dining experiences.
Right, but, like, could he not just be a different type of chef?
You mean Carmen the Bear? Of course he could.
Sure, or this guy.
Yeah, they could have just embraced making good food for reasonable prices, but that's not the world they live in. They live in the fine dining world.
Did he? He was in Louisiana. Like, couldn't he just, like, it wasn't like he was in Louisiana doing, like, really good cooking there.
No, that was his prison.
He was just shucking oysters. It was self-imposed, though. He was just like, I gotta go shuck some oysters. I was like, why? I guess he was sobering up, but it was like, why any of this?
Yeah.
You know? Okay, yeah, this is a nephew. This is a stupid movie. People shouldn't watch this, because they should just watch The Bear, because they deserve it. If you're gonna watch this movie, you deserve watching four seasons of The Bear. Watch the guy yell a bunch of stuff, and, you know, you can see people yelling, and that's what drama is. It's actually a comedy. It's in the comedy category.
You seen Burnt before you saw The Bear.
No, I wouldn't like this. I'm so hostile to these type of movies. Anything that shows a kitchen is just like, we gotta yell, otherwise it doesn't work. You know, the only way cooking works is if we yell. You know, the stoves are powered by screaming. It's just stupid. It's so self-serious. I just, like, I don't like that. I just, it doesn't even make an argument for itself, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. All right, well.
It's bad. It has, like, a cast of, like, really, you didn't recognize a lot of the names, but everyone in the cast is, like, someone who's done other stuff at a high level, so, you know.
Yeah. That's all I got on this one. You got anything else?
No, I mean, we weren't even talking about the movie for most of this, so I think, you know, we should kind of call it a wrap at this point.
All right, well, fwe, fwe, fwe.